Welcoming everyone again to tonight's webinar. My name is Brett Cease. I'll be your co-host for this evening. I'm CCL's Volunteer Education and Engagement Coordinator. And tonight's lesson is specifically on preparing for your lobby day meetings for our DC conference. I'll pass it to you, Ellie, to do a quick introduction if you wanted to, and then I'll go over the agenda.
I'll just say, hi, I'm Ellie Sparks. I'm CCL's Director of Field Development. Back to you, Brett.
All right. Well, we'll hear from you in just a little bit. That was very concise. And what I'll just say here is before we dive into the lesson, I think it's really important to acknowledge that for many of us, getting ready to meet with our members of Congress can feel like an intimidating process. So that's really what we're tackling tonight. And so in this series of lessons, what we're really trying to do is empower all of us within our volunteer network to remember that that most powerful tool in our toolbox is still dialogue from real life, authentic citizen advocates like ourselves. And our agenda tonight is really going to be following that. This is the second in a four-part series. Tonight, we're going to discuss what you can do to prepare yourself for a successful meeting with a member of Congress. Specifically, we're going to talk about research tips and our toolkit. We're going to talk about lobby meeting roles and how to assign those. We're going to really emphasize the value of practice through all of this, and also really respond to what to do and how to prepare for when a member might say no. And we'll really specifically dive in with a couple of role plays on that before jumping to Q&A at the very end. But without further ado, I'll pass it back to you, Ellie, to just ground us with your own personal experience and how you got started with researching for your first meeting with CCL.
Awesome. All righty. When I started the chapter in Richmond, Virginia, 8 years ago, our member of Congress was Representative Eric Cantor, House Majority Leader. And I can tell you, I was not thrilled with his leadership, but Citizens Climate Lobby told me to find something that I could respect, admire, and appreciate about him. So I started looking around to see what I could find. Now, at the time, I worked for a small nonprofit, and it turned out that my assistant had friends who had worked on Cantor's campaign. So I knew that getting a face-to-face meeting with the House Majority Leader would take some time. So I wanted to know about his legislative director, since that's who we'd be meeting with. And we did meet with him several times before a face-to-face meeting with Eric would become possible. Now, my assistant, a young man, asked his friends, also recent college graduates, about the legislative director. It turns out that they thought that the legislative director for Eric Cantor was one of the nicest guys. And that made me feel better about going to that first meeting. And I can tell you that over time, I fell in love with him as well, that legislative director. Now, after each meeting with the legislative director, we thanked him by email and by note card, and then we asked if we could have a meeting with Eric Cantor. It took 7 meetings with the legislative director before we got a face-to-face. Now, in the meantime, we looked for information about Cantor that might help us connect. We discovered that Eric Cantor was the only Jewish Republican member of Congress. Several of our volunteers were Jewish too, so that became a connection for us. When we walked into that face-to-face meeting in the Capitol building, the legislative director, who had become our friend over the 2 years that we courted him, greeted us with a hug. And then he shared some positive news about Eric's effort on education in the district. And the legislative director sounded proud when he talked about this. We love education. So when Eric walked into our meeting, we thanked him for leading discussions on improving public education. Back to you, Brett.
Perfect. And the rest is history, as we know. And I think that's a perfect window in to the description of the process of really how you prepared and worked towards meeting face-to-face with the House Majority Leader. So let's jump right in and talk about, Ellie and I are going to kind of trade off here on some of the tools and the research and the importance of really feeling prepared with what we've got to offer is going to help ground each of us as we get ready for our lobby day here in June. And a couple of those overviews are congressional bios, meeting minutes, meeting plans, several studies we'll go over, as well as a study guide to kind of help make sense of a lot of the talking points. And then just a quick reminder, we actually have a lot on supporting asks, but we'll mainly dive into that in Lobby 301. So without further ado, let's jump right in with biographies. So the first tool for doing research is the CCL Congressional Biography, or you can call it BIO for short. A BIO comes publicly available, and it's basically just information that we've actually set up to grab and pull automatically into our database a couple of times each year before the major lobby events, as well as kind of feature some of the research that CCL volunteers have done. You can get a copy for any member of Congress on Citizens Climate Lobby Community. I'm actually going to put that in the chat right now. And in just a little bit, I'll also show you where to find these if you go to Community. But just really quick on the bio, what can you expect to find on it? Biographical data on the member of Congress, including the schools they attended, their background, career, interests, religion, appreciation. You hardly have to do any work. It's all right there for you. Their congressional record as it pertains to climate and environmental votes, especially relevant to carbon pricing legislation. Statements that they've made connected to that. Committee assignments that might be relevant as well, whether they're in party leadership. District data, including demographics, major industries, employers, major donors. The list goes on. There's a lot of data. And along with that, this year, you're also going to get a link to some polling data that you can print out in advance too. And really, a lot of this is key, and you want to review the bio along with previous minute meetings, meeting minutes, which Ellie is going to review in just a moment. So as Ellie mentioned, you can get to know and anticipate questions that are going to come up naturally in that meeting. You can also develop through this kind of read a sense of understanding of why the member has taken the positions they've taken and really how to frame your questions and pose the way that you'd like to move that meeting forward more accurately, along with the people and the peer groups that influence that member. I'll also say this, if you're interested in going further than the bio, we used to actually have a long form and a short form bio. Right now we just provide kind of a mid form. It's about a couple of pages. If you want to go even further in depth, there's a couple of resources we recommend, one of which is just the legislator's website. If you just type in their last name often, .house.gov, if they're in the House, and then if it's in the Senate, it's the same thing just with Senate. We'd love for you to be able to kind of do your own research, see what else is relevant that isn't featured there. Another wonderful research website is called GovTrack. I'll put that link in the chat window here in just a little bit too. You can even get more in depth on recent votes, even, you know, more in depth on co-sponsorships they might have had, you name it. You don't have to do this if you're not interested, you don't have time. It's just a way to offer even more information if you're interested. And I'll just say this before showing you where to find that on Community as well. If you're going to DC this year, you'll receive your biographies you need the week before the conference. They're going to be mailed to everyone this week, this year on Thursday, June 7th. So you can start doing research ahead of time on the members' homepage or on GovTrack or anywhere else you want. But the actual official bios will be mailed out that week before to allow give in case any last minute schedule changes happen. So if you're curious about where to find biographies, what I recommend is going to Community, and here's the URL. It's just inside Community. And then from there, you can go to the Take Action Center, and then within there, there's a Lobby Congress button. And then basically from there, let's say you want to click on the House biographies. So we're going to click on House Biography, and that's going to queue up another window, and it's going to be essentially a Google Drive folder that has all of the different biographies available in the House all in one spot. So you can kind of see there's a long laundry list here that's available depending on who you might be interested in. The other thing I'll say is you have to scroll down often to find a member. You can also search up here in the top. But in order to find everyone, just allow your computer time to load, because at times it does take a little bit, depending on your internet connection, to actually see everyone. So from there, let's say I want to, you know, my representative is Representative Espaillat, so I'm going to click on his name here. If you go back here again, I see him at the very bottom, so I'm going to click on him. Here's what that bio looks like. You can see, again, a little window in, and if you actually want to download it or print it onto your computer, let's say you want to print it, I'm just going to click that window. And from there, you can see a little print dialog is going to queue up, and you can select your printer and go from there. So these are all available right now. You don't even have to wait for the bios that you'll be assigned to the specific meetings for June if you want to start reading up, particularly on your own representative that you're a constituent of. I recommend, again, going to the bio page on Community. But with that, Ellie, I'll pass it to you, and we'll talk about meeting minutes.
All right. So On the right-hand side of the screen, you should see a redacted example of some meeting minutes. Previous meeting minutes represent information which was shared in confidence in meetings between congressional offices and CCL volunteers over the years. We consider them to be confidential. This is some of the most sensitive information CCL possesses. If leaked, this information could destroy the trust CCL has been building with Congress. We send past meeting notes to the liaison and the lobby meeting leader. The liaison may share the previous minutes with you, or they may provide a summary of those meeting minutes. We do not share our notes with anyone outside of CCL, and we trust you, our volunteers, to keep this information confidential. If you want to prepare to address questions, concerns, or misconceptions, then by all means, read the past meeting notes you receive. So, for example, if meeting notes indicate a question about the border adjustments in the last two meetings, be prepared for it to come up again. Acknowledge that you understand the border adjustment is a concern you take seriously. Or if notes show that a staffer expressed concern over the cost of collecting the fee and distributing the dividend, then you could research that question and be prepared to address that in the meeting. Now think of this analogy. We've all had a teacher who would drop hints like, you might see this material again soon, or this section is important, and somehow the material magically appears on the test, right? That's what our meeting minutes are for. It's like the member of Congress is dropping those hints about what is going to be on the test.
All of that cramming that Ellie talked about for the test, you'll also be able to probably have a little study guide or cheat sheet for, and that's in the form of a meeting plan that the liaison or the group closest to the member has put together in preparation for your meeting. So it's going to detail the four following elements you can kind of see here in the window, the primary goal of that meeting, the appreciation that you have, or maybe a couple of them, for the meeting that you want to give to the member, as well as some strategic supporting asks that you think are really going to help move your member forward, and then really an outline or a plan for the discussion. And Ellie and I are going to role model kind of what that can look like again at the end of this meeting, and we'll even have a chance for you to workshop that in your own breakout rooms next Tuesday if you'd like. But we just kind of wanted to give you a little window in that most meetings in DC for June have a meeting plan with them. So that cheat sheet that Ellie was talking about is going to be helping back you up. I'll just say this too really quick. So CCL has used many studies, and they've been, you know, either commissioned by ourselves or other important organizations like the Department of Treasury, and you can use all of them in your preparations for a lobby meeting. Now, four of the tools that are here on this page include the REMI study, the household impact study, the dividend delivery, and then the Department of Treasury's carbon tax analysis. For those of you that are on the call that are relatively newish to CCL, I'll just take a quick moment to explain them. And then at this point, if you have questions during Q&A, we'd love to field them more. But again, none of these you have to be experts in, but it's helpful to know where they are and what they feature in case you'd like to study any of them to help you feel more prepared. That top one, the REMI study, it's a study that essentially examined the economic and the climate and, you know, fiscal power, demographic, all these other angles on a macroeconomic lens on what a steadily rising fee on carbon-based fuels would do when you return revenue back to households to our national economy. And it looked at kind of the regional distribution of those impacts, the energy mix that would be forecasted over 20 years. It's macroeconomic. If you're looking at the microeconomic side of things, so what actually happens on the short-term, immediate household level, that's the household impact study. It's a little bit different. And it examines the net financial impact across various socioeconomic groups, single parent households, you know, ethnic minorities, the elderly, single member households as well, you name it, throughout all of the country, on a year one slice of what that household would deal with after a $10 or $15 ton raise for carbon dioxide and return back to that household. Now, in community, we also have the availability for you to look up specific impacts in your state or your district even, especially for that household impact study. And as we reviewed last week in 101, data on how a policy specifically will impact a member's district is absolutely key. It's one of the most influential tools that we have at our disposal. So really being able to tell the story of those impacts, especially through the household impact study, is really going to be key. If you're also interested in the whole pathway of how the dividend would be administered and what that would look like and how much bureaucracy would be required and what the actual financial hit would be, we actually have a study that we're currently working on updating by the architect of the Bush and Obama era tax cuts, a Treasury Department employee by the name of Alan Lerman. And that's a wonderful study that goes in depth there if you're interested. And then lastly, the Office of Tax Analysis paper is one that the Department of Treasury put out without any consultation with us. It actually was released about a week or two ahead of the Trump administration beginning. And essentially it looks at the same questions we're interested in looking at, but it actually looks at different ways of using the revenue. So instead of just looking at what happens if you give it back to households, they also look at what happens if you reduce the payroll tax or corporate income tax. They're interested in seeing which of those options is most efficient. So anyways, all of that's available. And what I'm going to do really quickly is just show you couple of years, what we used to do is bombard you with all these different ideas. People would feel overwhelmed. They wouldn't know kind of where to go afterwards. The link I just put in the chat window is the one link you have to remember, because all of that's on one page now. You don't have to kind of hunt and peck throughout community. And let me show you in community how you get there. So if you go to community's homepage, this probably looks familiar. You can see we have our latest news. Below that, right below that, we have four large buttons that often kind of feature most important areas to go to. And right now, leading up to the lobby day, we have one called Prepare for Lobby Day. You want to click that. And here is the view of what that page looks like. And within that is all of these studies and the links to anything else you might need to prepare that we're talking about tonight, all in one spot. It's even got a tab that shows our training schedule. It shows a timeline of when you can expect emails from DC. It talks about where and how you can plan to meet with your team before actually lobbying. Ellie's going to go over that in a little bit, but I just want to reassure people that if you're taking notes tonight or you're scrambling to try to remember things, just remember that one website. Or again, go back to the main page in community whenever you need help and click on Prepare for Lobby Day. So with that, I'll pass it back to you, Ellie.
Alrighty, so Brett showed us where that page was. We've got a new tool for the conference, the study guide. So in previous years, we would give you a collection of laser talks, all of the laser talks we'd ever written, and we'd say, study these. This year, we have instead created a study guide specifically for this June's lobby day. We've found that the meeting goes better if we stop and ask their thinking after we've shared information on a topic. And we hope this helps all of us strike a good balance of listening and sharing information. Now, focusing on internalizing the prompts in the study guide rather than memorizing the prompts, to internalize the prompts, I like to share what I'm learning with my family in my own words. And when I can describe the areas connected with carbon fee and dividend in my own words, I'm better able to listen to what others are saying without distracting myself with worry about how I will respond. When I can listen actively, I'm better able to pick up on the underlying values behind someone's words, and connecting with those values opens doors. The study guide is only 4 pages long with many hot links to resource material. If you're interested in learning more about what topics and questions have come up most often in our past congressional meetings, we also have a resource on community called Frequently Raised Questions in Lobby Meetings, as well as the specific suggestions for progressive and conservative libertarian conversations. We've selected all of the topics in the study guide this year based on questions that come up over and over again, like the Climate Solutions Caucus, our policy's dividend or impact on jobs or consumer and energy costs. If you become well versed on these topics, then your competence and comfort in lobby meetings will grow. Remember to check out previous lobby meeting notes for clues on which topics of concern your member of Congress and his or her staff might have.
We have a variety of roles that volunteers fill in a lobby meeting, and we're going to review each of these roles. Each one will get a little section tonight. Keep in mind that these roles are merely suggestions. If you have past experience meeting with a member or staff person, you will know best which roles apply or not in your particular meeting, so be flexible. The roles we suggest ensure that we remember what we want to do in the meeting and we have someone committed to doing it. And we want everyone to feel comfortable contributing during the discussion. So that speaks to that question of who is part of the conversation. So first, let's look at leaders and liaisons. And so we have one CCL volunteer who has offered to be the face of Citizens Climate Lobby in a particular congressional office, and we call that person a liaison. The liaison builds a personal relationship with the congressional office. They maintain regular contact, they act as a source of information, and they provide updates on Citizens Climate Lobby progress to the office. That's what I was doing with Michael Lowry, that legislative director I fell in love with Eric Cantor's office. Often, the liaison will serve as the meeting leader as well. This provides continuity for the congressional office and for Citizens Climate Lobby. Sometimes, the liaison isn't present in the meeting, so an experienced CCL volunteer will serve as the meeting leader instead. And that brings us to the leader. The leader manages the meeting. Leaders do not dominate the meeting. An analogy I find useful here is that of a conductor. The leader assigns roles to the other volunteers. The leader empowers everyone to share and participate, especially the constituents. The leader may choose to be in charge of handling the transitions between different parts of the meeting. They keep the conversation on track and help wrap things up on time. The leader helps a team settle on an appropriate supporting ask for the meeting. Brett, back to you.
Great. Thanks so much, Hilary. I love that conductor analogy. So let's transition to the next role then, a very aptly named role title, the asker. I wonder what that person does. The asker clearly and confidently states R1 ask to introduce or support legislation that puts a fee on carbon and returns the revenue back to American households. The asker listens carefully and seeks understanding, especially in that delivery, and is able to respond directly. Here's an example of what that could sound like in a meeting. So, you know, Representative Smith, our big goal this year is to get effective national legislation passed, and as you know, we would like you to introduce or support legislation that puts a fee on carbon and returns all of the proceeds back to American households. Is that something you can support? If yes, then you can follow up immediately with, that's terrific. Let's talk about next steps and then proceed to ask them to do something that you figured out will move things along and inform our DC office. If no, we're going to jump into that a little bit more later on. But again, a quick response that you prepared already to give back, such as, could you tell us a little bit more about what you'd need to be able to support this? Or could you tell us a little bit more about what you object to in the proposal? It's a perfect way to continue that dialogue rather than having to take a no and then pivoting off topic. Also, if they're not ready to support fully carbon fee and dividend yet at that moment, what we'll talk about next week is making supporting asks and being strategic in those. Now, we cover those next week primarily, but just as a quick kind of peek ahead to those, you hear us talk about the primary ask that we just went over and then the secondary ask. So primary asks, you want to swing for the fence. You don't want to hesitate. You don't want to negotiate with yourself as you deliver it. You want to be confident and you want to wait for their answer and really listen to what they have to say and really what they're sharing, even by their nonverbals and their response. Now, depending on what they share, your secondary ask is going to be strategically positioned as a smaller step to move them forward or up the ladder, if you will, of the kind of metaphor, the climate advocacy ladder, and has specific and actionable ways that they can be involved and co-collaborate as an office with you on this issue. We'll leave it at that for now, but I think that's a pretty key distinction to make between the primary ask that the asker role will take on and secondary asks, which the leader can help facilitate and the larger group can participate in really drawing out.
The note taker is very important. If possible, the leader will put an experienced lobbyist in this role. Someone who has some experience will be able to pick up on subtleties in the conversation, body language, and quickly identifies important emerging themes. Great notes help us both locally and nationally. So locally, the notes keep a running record of where our member of Congress stands and how a member's position has evolved over time. Our notes inform future meetings and ensure solid meeting follow-up. And our notes enable us to act on action items we might otherwise forget and help to pass knowledge on when a group or a liaison changes leadership. Nationally, our notes give us a sense of the big national picture and help us to identify trends in Congress.
Excellent. So what does a good note taker capture during the course of the meeting, you might ask? Well, we already talked a lot about what we're hoping that they really take in, and that is the following. First off, we want to really know how they respond to our supporting asks. If the member of the staffer agrees to a supporting ask, we want to make sure what they agree to and have that captured so we can help follow up and pass that back on to those in the district that couldn't make the actual DC meeting so they can help fulfill their promise. If they have concerns, the staffer or the member with respect to our policy, we want to capture those. If they have questions, we want to capture those about our policy. If they have any recommendations about our strategy, who to work with, who they'd like to work with, any other thoughts they might have about the general climate on carbon pricing on the Hill currently, we definitely want to capture that for Danny to be able to see as well. Points that our strategy or policy that we mentioned or shared that they found interesting, I think, would also be very helpful. And I think one of the other wonderful things to kind of key in on that's often, not intuitive as you begin to take notes is the overall tone, the engagement level of the office. Were they interested? Were they hostile? Did they want to be anywhere but in that meeting at that time? And what was their body language? What were their nonverbals like? Really being able to capture this as note taker is going to be key in getting a read for that office and their stance on the issue, where they might have an ability to move forward, where we want to be assured to avoid or pivot from for future meetings. So discuss this with others after the meeting as well to make sure that it's not just the note taker's impression that's being captured. Oftentimes one person's input can kind of be different than somebody else's. You want to make sure to bounce that off of each other afterwards. Ellie will talk about the debrief in just a little bit, but I'll close by saying you also want to capture action items in that note-taking. So if there's anything that the member or the staff are committed to, or if there's anything that the group said that they'd commit to, make sure to capture that so we can, again, be sure to follow up on that. What I'll do here is also put a link in the chat window just now to, if you'd like to just learn a little bit more, or, have a more thorough exposure to good tips and tricks for 10 great notes, I just put a link to our Taking Notes tutorial. It's actually not a webinar, but just a series of readings that you can kind of click through and take notes from for yourself. And with that, I'll pass it back to you, Ellie, to talk about the debrief.
All right. So after you leave the office, the congressional office, I want you to scoot down the hall and hold a debrief. Avoid standing near the entrance to the member's office, or actually anybody else's office. While volunteers have the meeting fresh in their minds, the note taker reads the notes aloud to the other members, confirming the follow-up, who will write and deliver the thank you card, who will file the meeting report online, who will send requested information to the member or staffer, who will add a post about your visit on your social media feed, who has plans to generate a letter to the editor that mentions the member of Congress by name. I'll let you know many volunteers bring thank you notes to lobby day. And during the debrief, someone writes a thank you note. Everyone in the meeting signs a note. And then someone pops back into the office and gives the thank you note to the receptionist.
Perfect. Nice and smooth. So at this point, what we're going to do is pivot to that role of the timekeeper. And the timekeeper really is one you can think of who, at the beginning of the meeting, they directly ask how much time we have for the meeting. That's really their moment to shine, if you will. They get to own the meeting at the very beginning and then follow that commitment throughout the rest of the meeting. And at the point of the 5-minute mark, when we're about to kind of hit where we've said we'd stop for the actual meeting length, they signal the rest of the team, or they've established it, that we've got about 5 minutes left. We also want to, at the end of that time, acknowledge that we've hit the end. And, you know, again, the member or the staffer can interrupt us and say, no, I'm having such a great time. We'd love to keep going. But chances are this is going to be one of 12 meetings they're having on the Hill that day. And they're going to appreciate your sensitivity and awareness of really being able to be prompt and commit to the time that you said you want. Almost everyone worries that they're going to get stuck talking with people for too long. So this is another way that we can be gracious and offer that way out. And also read. I think the timekeeper also can have a really important role in reading when the staff or the member is done by looking at their body language. You know, when they start to check the watch or when they close their notebook, that means that it's really time to start transitioning to the end of the meeting, even if, you know, you're only halfway through. We really want to make sure to wrap up in a way that minds their time and what they're communicating non-verbally. Doesn't mean at that point that we get to cram everything in last minute we didn't get to say yet. There's clearly going to be meetings after this. You might be tempted, you know, and you might feel, especially if this is your first time, that this is kind of our time to shine. It's much more important. You know, CCL takes the long game, the long strategy, the relational approach of really being able to build on that. Chances are you're not going to have a lot of hostility in your meetings. Danny's going to go over this at the conference, but every year we have more and more engagement, less and less outright dismissal with our meetings. But just in case that does come up, we want to be sensitive to it. And we never want to rush ourselves and really, you know, be looking to begin concluding the meeting when the people are ready to do so that we're meeting with. I always like to think that we want to leave them wanting more than a reason for us to come back for another meeting. So I'll pass it back to you, Ellie, with that.
Awesome. All right. So another role for us in the meeting is the appreciator. This person expresses gratitude for something the member of Congress has accomplished recently. Ideally, if possible, this is a constituent, a member, a person who lives in the district or state. We want to have done some research in advance of the meeting to figure out what you can appreciate the member of Congress for, something genuine that you appreciate about them. It shows, when we show appreciation, it sets a positive tone. It disarms people who might have a misconception about us. It takes the chip off our shoulder. And frankly, if we really want to be asking our members of Congress to lead on climate solutions, we need to find a way in our heart to begin to see them as having the skill set and the stamina to do something like that. So back to you, Brett.
So here's a little riddle, or maybe it's philosophy. I don't know. You tell me. If a tree falls in the woods and no one is around to hear it, did it make a sound? Well, what about this? If a meeting happens in D.C. and no one follows up on it, should we expect anything to happen? In general, thinking about this, the liaison is the one that's going to do that crucial follow-up to make sure that tree is heard in their final moments, if you will, and carry that relationship forward. Sometimes another constituent might make a better fit too. So that's going to be up to your meeting team to figure out who's going to be the follow-up person. But whoever it's picked, we want to make sure not to drop that ball. We want to make sure, as Ellie mentioned, that follow-up to drop off the thank you card the same day. You can include a photo or any other accoutrement if you want. From the notes, you want to make sure to identify specific things that they agreed to do for us and really kind of have the main or supporting ask that we agreed to do for them. So the follow-up person could really make sure to have that nurtured as well. And then the follow-up person is also encouraged to be politely persistent if they don't respond. Again, members are getting, you know, somewhere upwards of 200 to 1,000% the amount of correspondence that they did even 10 years ago in the offices. So if your first email, your first phone call didn't get you anywhere, don't be dismayed. Circle back a week later, try again, and make sure whatever commitments that we've said we do are going to continue to be delivered on. And at this point, I'll pass it back to you for the lever, Ellie.
All right. So last but not least, we have the lever. This is the person who leaves our one-page ask behind. There you can see what that might look like. It is the only thing we leave behind, so we want someone who can remember to leave it behind. You might bring other material to the meeting, but don't offer to leave the other material behind. As we discussed in Lobbying 101, congressional staffers have too much to do. And as you can see, they've seen a dramatic increase, 200% to 1,000% increase in communications with constituents. By law, members of the House are limited to 18 staffers since the 1970s. So please let us not overwhelm them with a bunch of handouts. And anyway, most staffers are millennials who would prefer an electronic document over a printed copy. If they don't ask for a specific resource, they likely won't read it. If they do ask, 9 times out of 10, they'll want it as an electronic document. So we only leave the one-page primary ask behind to avoid overwhelming them. Now, that said, we might bring other resources to the meeting, like the media packets or booklet of faith statements. Have hard copies of these additional resources on hand to share and show to the staffer. Don't plan on leaving them. Plan on showing them. Only if they ask for them. Don't ask them to take one. Occasionally, you'll have a staffer who really wants a copy of that media packet. Now, we do deliver some things. We deliver constituent comment forms and leader letters, and those we certainly leave behind. I like to put the most sincere, lovely letter on top. I might even read an excerpt aloud to the staff person or member. And trust me, they will probably read a few of the letters they get from local leaders and voters. So we are not professional lobbyists, us CCLers. So staff members and members of Congress find themselves stunned when we live up to our reputation as being one of the most well-prepared citizens groups on Capitol Hill. Practicing and having a clear meeting plan demonstrates that you respect their time. You can practice the prompts in the study guide. Remember, don't memorize them, but practice communicating them in your own words so you can feel confident and capable. With your mind at ease, you will be fully present in the meeting. Don't lecture. It's a relationship, not a lecture hall. If you can carve a little time for practice with each other from your meeting teams during DC, you will go into your meeting with more confidence. You will have confidence in your own ability, and you will have confidence and trust in your teammates. Practicing ahead of time allows you to learn the issues your teammates are well versed in so that you could defer to them when appropriate. And when the member of Congress and the staff members see you working smoothly together, they will come away even more impressed by our capacity to make things happen. So, when will we have time to practice with our teams? We plan to have your meeting schedules, bios, and plans to those of you going to DC the week before the conference, so by Thursday, June 7th. Your team leaders will coordinate scheduling your team's time to practice. Here's a few additional recommendations to help you prepare. If possible, reserve time on the evening of Thursday, June 7th, ahead of your travels to meet on Zoom, just like this. And you can familiarize yourself with the other team members and begin assigning roles and research ahead of the conference. If folks in your team arrive early in DC, you are welcome to meet in 3 of the rooms at the Omni Shoreham, the Cabinet, the Diplomat, and the Congressional Rooms on Saturday from 5:30 to 10 p.m. During the conference on Sunday and Monday, your team can meet during conference break times depending on your hour of your Tuesday lobby meeting. So we've got a little table. We have this chart available online. And this is an effort to coordinate so you can meet with your various teams and not have them overlap. If you have any questions about your team's meeting plans, wait until June 7th so that you know the appropriate meeting lead to contact. Once you've contacted your team leads after June 7th, you can ask Amy Bennett questions if your team leader is unable to answer those. And Amy's email is amy@citizensclimate.org. We want you to practice as a team. We also want to encourage you to practice independently. Stand in front of the mirror and talk to yourself in the bathroom mirror as if you're meeting with a member of Congress. And remember this, the meeting plans are flexible. So follow your team lead in the meeting. Be ready to think on your feet. Each meeting is just one step in the process of winning allies. And what we don't accomplish in this one meeting can be worked out on another day. As long as you leave them with a positive feeling about who we are, that's a success.
Yeah, thank you, Ellie. Let's close by setting up a practice communications exercise. Ellie and I are just going to demonstrate a little lobby training webinar example. You know, every one of these, we're including a demonstration of advanced listening and communication skills.
So many of us have gone to meetings with our member of Congress year after year, season after season, asking for leadership on climate solutions in general and support of carbon fee and dividend in particular. And some of us hear a long, sustained no to our request. No to co-sponsoring carbon fee and dividend, no to joining the Bipartisan Climate Solutions Caucus, no to co-signing the Republican House resolution, no. This no affects us each time we hear it. We have simply been asking for something we deeply desire, to solve the climate crisis, and we get a no. Something we all truly need, a livable climate, and we get a no. Something the member of Congress and his or her family needs, a national policy that will move us towards a stable climate, and we get a no. Sometimes we get a false yes, which is really a no, or we get dismissed altogether with, this will never happen, it's impossible to work with the other party. Any which way the no comes, we find ourselves in fight, flight, or freeze. We might argue, or we might depart the meeting and fear returning, or we sit stunned, unable to find our footing and respond in any coherent manner. Let's do something else instead. Let's get curious. Let's play in that space. Let's investigate. Let's transform the resistance of our member of Congress or their staffer and create something even greater than either of us could have thought before. Not compromise, creation. What is required of us? No flinching in the face of no. No backing down, zero attack, no aggression. We decide to approve of their existence just long enough to get a glimpse of what their no is protecting. Once we see what they are trying to protect, we validate that, not the no itself. How do we do this? First, allow yourself to maintain a restful state, even in moments of apparent high-stakes conflict. Locate and approve of the thing for which your member of Congress is fighting to protect. Continue loving your own goal of solving the climate crisis and passing carbon fee and dividend. Find energy in the possibility that solving your concern along with that of your member of Congress will create something bigger than either of you could imagine. Do this enough times and you may find yourself reaching the place where no is your favorite word. You want to hear no because no makes you curious and intrigues you.
All right, so let's put this into practice here. We're almost at the top of the hour. I love that that spark that you're providing us here, Ellie, aptly named. So let's practice, you know, kind of what Ellie's talking about. And again, you know, the precise topic or the content of what we're about to show really isn't the important part. Rather, it's that dynamic process, that adaptive process that Ellie is demonstrating. as the CCL volunteer. That's really what to key in on. She's going to use it to draw information out from me, the person she's meeting with, and listen carefully to what Ellie does to draw out more information, even in the face of no, to identify values and to determine when it's okay to proceed. So I'm going to play a member of Congress. Ellie's going to be the CCL volunteer. Situation is that she's just mentioned the carbon fee and dividend, made that primary ask pitch to me, and here we go.
All right, so we propose a fee on fossil fuels, starting low at $15 per ton and steadily increasing.
My boss is not going to go for that in any way possible. I'm sorry, but I got to stop you right there.
Thanks for your honesty. Can you tell us more about what's behind the no?
Look, if I have to think about it, I get that we need to do something. However, I know that he's worried about China and India getting off scot-free while we're going to penalize ourselves. If the U.S. is the only one that does this, it's going to kill our economy.
It sounds like supporting American businesses is important to you and your boss.
Of course. We need a strong business community in the U.S., and if we want a healthy economy, we need to make sure it's protected. China has lots of people willing to work for low wages, and that already puts us at a manufacturing disadvantage. And if we keep on increasing our energy costs, then more and more business is going to go overseas.
Keeping businesses here is important to me as well, so thank you for mentioning it. Do you have any thoughts on how the U.S. might get China and India to come along?
I guess I haven't thought about that much, but we obviously can't regulate China. And subsidies don't cross borders either.
Yeah, I've been scratching my head on that question too. It seems like through regulation, we're already raising the cost of energy here in the U.S.
And we'd love to find something that levels the playing field if we are going to take a policy like this on for U.S. businesses.
We really appreciate the conversation about a level playing field for all nations because it's something we've put a lot of thought into as well. Would you like to hear about what we've learned?
Sure. So we'll cut it right there. Obviously, the conversation will go many other ways. And really, what we're hoping that you picked up on is how Ellie asked questions to get more information out of me. She did so to determine what was the underlying value behind my China comment. And then she really agreed with that value and sought to find common ground to build off of there. She asked a couple of other additional questions before really asking, and I think this is really key too, she asked permission to proceed to kind of share additional information. So think about how that conversation felt, especially if immediately following my China comment, Ellie instead were to have launched right into the data about how the world is moving forward without us, and if we don't want our kids speaking Mandarin, well, then we better buck up and kind of get going. But it would have felt as if she was telling me I was wrong at the same time. And instead, what she did was steer the conversation towards finding common ground before asking permission. So in that case, I'm more prepared to hear what she says. So what I'm going to do here at this point is just kind of do a quick one slide, I should say, review. Three main points: be prepared, be focused, and be engaged. If you took three things away from tonight's meeting, that's really the hope that we have for everyone's preparations for the meeting. We want you to be prepared so that you can be clear with your ask and connect it locally and personally. We want you to feel focused so that you can realize your member's meeting might only be 15 minutes. And in that time, you want to do all of this stuff, right? So the importance of being focused and practicing early and delivering that ask and the appreciation early is our key. And then engaged. Collaborate with how you can work together with the office. See them as co-creators. Don't overwhelm with handouts. Don't snow them with paper. You know, the less is better. Be sure to follow up immediately, as we've said. And with that, I'll pass it to you, Ellie, to read a quote before we field questions.
Awesome. All right. This is Alex Steffen. Optimism is a political act. Those who benefit from the status quo are perfectly happy with a large population of people who think nothing is going to get any better. In fact, these days, cynicism is obedience. What's really radical is being willing to look right at the magnitude and difficulty of the problems we face and still insist that we can solve those problems. Thank you, everyone, for attending.
Excellent. Thanks for sticking on, everyone.
Thank you, Brett. Thank you, Ellie.
Okay. Thanks, Deb.